This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It is Health and Living and I'm Meera Sivasothi, Paul J. Consultant Clinical Psychologist in the studio. And today's show is about the concept of enough. Welcome to the show, Paul. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. Good afternoon.
You proposed this topic and why?
Well, enough concept. For the show, enough is spelled E-N-U-F.
Oh, really?
Keeping up with the modern kind of bad spelling, you know.
Why enough is enough? And I understand how this can be a huge, massive problem. We're just not talking about, we're talking about indulgence in all sorts of ways, especially that it's the end of the year and a lot of us are going to go to town.
True. Not just that, but it's also the end of the year and I was kind of looking through my files and thinking about some of my clients and stuff. And the word enough comes up in many different ways. You know, I don't have enough, not loved enough, I'm not good enough, I have too much of this, not enough of that. And yes, spending too much and buying, you know, what's enough and how it really applies to all our lives. It's a very important word. And I was toying with this word in my head. And recently, my wife and I were doing some cleaning up before Christmas and all that. You know, we got time to clean up the house, minimalizing a little bit. And I had like 16 extra bags, you know, this kind of sachets and things like that.
Yeah.
And all new ones. It was all gifts. We didn't go out and buy it. And then we had all these containers, beautiful tins and Tupperware containers and wonderful containers that I must admit I keep because one day it'll be useful.
That's what we all say.
Yeah, I mean, if it's screws and nails, I understand, but the tins kind of went over the top a little bit. And I've got so many gifts over the years, pens, wonderful pens, all these wonderful brands and stuff. A couple of extra watches which are kept away in this corner called the gifts to be given away. And we invited this couple of ours, a young couple, friends, and we said, would you like to have first pick? We're going to give these bags away. They had a good look at the bags. They had a good look at all these containers and all. And just 2 days ago, they said, no, thank you, no, thank you. We have enough. And I thought that was so brilliant, man, for them to say we have enough. And I was thinking about, do we have enough of what? Do we have too much of something or too little of something? Or why are we going hunting for these things that we kind of accumulate?
Is it part of our DNA to feel that we need more?
Well, we cannot say it's part of our DNA. If it's part of survival, then I'd say DNA because it's supposed to be hardwired in you and it emerges at different times. But we kind of develop that habit to be able to hoard food. Like if you're in the winter, animals do that. It's in their DNA. But there's a good reason for it. So you store extra food. If we know there's going to be water shortage, we store water. But human beings in this day and age, we don't need to store containers like that.
But what I'm saying is maybe that's how we were made. And so, you know, we don't need to hoard the stuff that we did before. But it's still part of us to want to hoard. You know,
I wouldn't generalize it. Before we, in this kind of generation lifestyle developed, we've had nuns and monks who live with not enough. Well, I wouldn't say not enough. Actually, they are the ones who live with enough, just enough, the bare minimums and that lovely Disney film, The Bare Necessities, you know.
Yeah.
We've developed this habit. And because we've developed this habit, commercialization has thrived. And they actually thrive on our desire to purchase. And we already have something, but we desire something better, something more, something bigger. And we keep riding on this wave called maybe I need more, maybe. And then you develop this rationale for it, you know. I think I need this because, and you'll work yourself around it.
Yeah. But capitalism is, I can't see it coming to an end. It's going to be with us for a while. How do you think then, what is enough?
When you decide, more than enough, or is enough going to become a pathology? If it's going to become a pathology in terms of psychological issues, yes, it becomes like a bad habit. It becomes an addictive process. Having more than enough in terms of sugar in your blood, and then it becomes a pathology of a different nature. Having more than not enough sleep or too much sleep or too much of something else, entertainment, so many other things. But this fine balance, this in the human body, we call it homeostasis. In terms of work-life balance, in terms of attaining love, sharing love, giving love. That is a fine balance. We call it Schwartzism.
Really?
Yeah, it's maintaining good balance.
Okay. Why do we know why we overindulge?
I really don't know.
But no, we overindulge sometimes to the extent where it's a big problem to ourselves. And that I mean, we have the common sense to know that we're overindulging, but we continue to do that.
I know. It's desire. It's purely that. There's no pathological state for you and I to want more. You know, I actually believe it's okay to want more. There's no harm in wanting more. But do we need more? And the advisor that I have who constantly checks my balance in my mind is my wife. No, do we need this? You sure?
Yeah.
Do we need it? And yeah, you need reminders like that. And
yeah.
I tend to be able to want to buy something or to upgrade something when I don't need it. But I have that tendency. And I wouldn't blame coming from a poor family background to cause that. But I don't think there's a built-in pathology. It's a habit that is developed.
Over time. Okay.
And of course, the commercials are playing on us. Yeah, the persuasive powers are playing on us too.
Working in our subconscious. What's your personal weakness?
My personal weakness?
The one thing you can't...
Why do you want to call it weakness?
The one thing you cannot get enough of.
Or salt water. The sea. Okay, now you see out there. That's a point, actually.
Yes.
Come to think of it, that's a point. I have enough of experience in the sea. I have enough. I want more. Maybe two or three visits for diving in a year is good and is enough for me to rejuvenate. But I want more because I have great pleasure in it. I know it's good for my body. It relaxes me. It gives me time to contemplate. At least for 5 days, I'm in a good habit of sleeping, eating, working, and all that kind of stuff. I get healthier too. But I want more, and then I will have to pay more. And then what happens is diving in Malaysian waters is not good enough. I want to go here. I want to go there. And then I'll end up in Mauritius spending much more than I need to, and things like that.
Yeah, and then one thing just leads to the other. The whole festive season is coming up. What are some of the common mistakes you've seen people actually make when it comes to overindulging? Well, forget about... Well,
selfless overindulging? Meaning you buy loads and loads of gifts, expensive gifts for all your family members and friends. Is that doing more than enough?
Sounds familiar. It's doing more than enough, but not justice to yourself and your credit card.
Yeah, true. On the other hand, what happens also is if you give a 50 ringgit ang pao to a young person these days, they'll say, that's not enough. And economically, they might be right, because what can it buy?
Yeah.
Unless you're going to sit on it for 50 years and see how that develops.
How it grows. Yeah.
Yeah, the festive season in terms of self-spending, definitely there's an overindulgence of wanting more. Renewal of shirts, shoes, socks and things like that. Cars are on sale now suddenly because of the festive season. Buy early, buy Christmas. And it's our desire to purchase, desire to want more. And we're not just talking about material stuff. People are wanting more love, more attention. They're wanting more satisfaction of all sorts.
Is that necessarily a good thing or a bad thing?
No, I think often it can lead to a bad thing, especially in terms of interpersonal love, intimacies, sexual intimacies, in terms of indulgence, in terms of friends and socializing. Things can go awry pretty badly.
Okay, and you want more, but then you're not giving. Nobody talks about the giving part.
Mira, I don't think you can justify your pathology with regards to having enough by saying, I give more. You know, I want more, and I'm justified because I give more. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they're related at all. You cannot justify altruism for the desire of self-gratification.
No. Okay. We're discussing how much is enough, the concept of enough given at the end of the year and all of us going to be overindulging, whether it's food, whether it's, you know, sort of having your credit cards go, you know, through the roof because of spending and all of that. If you have a question for Paul, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Earlier on when I said, what is your personal weakness, Paul, you sort of jumped.
I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah. Wouldn't you say it's a weakness?
No, that's why I asked you. It wasn't in self-defense. Why is it always a weakness? I don't think wanting more is a weakness. I definitely have more than enough T-shirts. I definitely have. I've given away many, but I don't use as many, thinking I will sooner or later lose weight and get into it because I like that T-shirt. So I have more than enough. In fact, I have more than enough of everything in life. I have everything that I need, but still there is a desire to want more. Now, we want more money. We want more comfort. We want better air conditioners, more efficient cars. There's nothing wrong with wanting more, but it's in achieving and maintaining the balance. Because as soon as you engage in the desire to attain this or to accumulate this, you are going to be offsetting something else. It's going to be at the expense of something else. A simple example is our children don't have enough of our time, especially in families these days, because we think we don't have enough money, and so we have to work hard, and we have a maid to look after the child. So where's the priority of, we want more money. We need more money, so we have a maid. So there is an offset. Something is losing out somewhere along the line.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking about what sort of change that, you know, priority, really.
Oh, that's exactly what I have in my notes, too.
Why are we not thinking about the priority?
I wouldn't think that all of us are bad people.
No, we're not.
We're not. But then somewhere along the line, you kind of get hung up on something, and you get carried away. So there's no time to stop and think. Really no time at all. And I think it's all an issue of individual confidence and discipline to want to change things. We're in a high tide. We're in a very high tide here, and we're all caught in this high tide.
Do you see a lot of people coming in with these sort of issues? This might be an underlying issue, but it sort of manifests in other ways.
In terms of personality disorders, yeah, there are people who believe they don't have enough, and they get so hyper, especially in bipolar disorders, and they go out and do a lot of purchasing. So sometimes it manifests in terms of psychiatric disorders, mm-hmm. but these are only behaviors due to probably an organic source, organic issue. But habitually spending too much cigarettes, too much drinking, too much physical activity, even over-exercising. Now, they all reflect some other kind of psychological issue. Yes, we have a lot of people coming to see us about things like related to those issues, primarily in terms of deficits, not enough love, not enough time, not enough listening time, not enough talking time, not enough sleeping time. Yes, we have those kinds of issues. And the reason why that happens is if you and I are buddies all the time and I want more and I'm seeking more than enough, you're not going to have enough of me, mm-hmm. definitely. So there is always the other side of the seesaw, mm-hmm. where there's going to be someone enjoying too much or more than enough, and someone else who's not enough, and that relationship is going to be in jeopardy.
Okay, but people who come to you who are always not being loved enough and all of that, get over it now.
Get over it.
Yeah, really. What are the underlying problems?
The human condition. The human condition needs to be loved.
I think we all will just say we're not being loved enough.
Nola.
Really?
Definitely. Shall we make this an airtime therapy time?
Don't you dare, Paul.
No. It's the human, not just human beings, all animals. All animals, especially us now, referring to and talking to human beings. Yes, we all need to be loved. It's a basic need. We need to be loved enough.
How much is enough?
When you don't have any disorders, when you are a functional human being, and I think there is no one level that you attain and say, this is enough, I'm filled to the brim. water evaporates, and so does love, okay? So you don't take anything for granted. You got to top it up occasionally. But if you ignore it, it's all going to evaporate. You run dry. And then it's going to take a long time to fill that cup again. And sometimes people say, you know, I have more than enough love. I know you love me, La. You don't you know I love you, La? These famous statements, yeah? And they take this thing, there's enough love in the house, but it's not being expressed, it's not being talked about, it's not being touched, nothing is happening about the love. It's kind of diffused into the atmosphere at home. And suddenly you realize, hey, not enough, La. The kettle has been boiling so long, it's gone dry.
When we come back, you're going to give me a real-life example because I really want to make some sense of this.
Okay.
Coming up next on The Big
Switch
Adventure.
On the kettle.
Yes, if you have a question for Paul on overindulging or, you know, how much is enough, give us a call. The number is 03-7710-9000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon, it's Health and Living. I'm Mira Siviso, the Paul Jake Consultant Clinical Psychologist in the studio with us. We are discussing the concept of enough. We tend to overindulge, and you know, before we left off, before the break, we were talking about the concept of love and how much is enough. We have Joe on the line. Joe, you have a question.
My name is Joe.
Yep.
I'm Joe
here. Hi, Joe. Okay,
hi. Should I call you doctor?
No, just Paul, fine.
All right, Paul. Okay, I always have this, I would maybe an issue, maybe not, maybe it's an issue to me, but maybe to my wife, which is always complaining, you know, like, and I feel that I've given so much love and time and attention to her and to the kids, but it's never seemed enough for her, which I find it, you know, sometimes it crosses my mind whether is it a psychological disorder or maybe it's just her being a woman, you know, like, and I don't mean to be feminist, you know, I'm doing my, pardon me, but yeah. How do I tackle this issue? And, you know, it seems like, you know, like sometimes I feel like maybe I have to quit my job and be a house husband and be there all the time.
I'm curious, psychological disorder on your part or your wife's part?
On the wife's part.
How very convenient. Okay. All right, you have a question for...
No.
Okay, we'll answer that on air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
For starters, I don't think this is gender-specific at all. So it's not just the wife or the husband complaining that it's not a wife thing or a woman thingy. If she was working full-time and you were the house husband or house person, you might come up with the same complaint as well. Now, when somebody complains about anything, whatever it is, there's an emotion behind that expression, whatever, anything. There's an emotion behind it. So what we need to do is to get in touch with that emotion. The reality of the complaint itself need not be investigated just yet. But to get in touch with that emotion and find out why that emotion has decided to reside, take root, and begin to be expressed in this manner is important. So there might be a reason there will definitely be a reason why she's verbalizing this issue. She's using time, she's using attention, and she's using the word called love, which is one of the worst reductionistic words in the world. There's so many aspects of love. Now, some people measure love by the amount of money you give them, pocket money, etc., etc. Some love in terms of time, some love in terms of 4 holidays a year. So love is a very diffuse issue, very reductionistic, dangerous one-worder. But she's decided to express it in terms of these. She needs a good sit-down and long-term discussion, long time. You can't understand this in one moment because it's taken several years, I'm sure, for her to come to this stage. And for you to be able to call and chat about this means I hope she's hearing that it does matter to you. You're taking it seriously. You're asking the right questions. And I strongly recommend that you can tell her I consulted a psychologist for free. And you need to sit and chat with her to understand where she's coming from. That's urgent.
How should Joe start this conversation, Paul?
Start with the word darling. Sweetheart.
Very helpful.
Very helpful. No. We start with the fact that we need to talk about this. Always start with your point of view first, because I feel that. So take ownership of the situation and say, I feel that you are saying this regularly and I must address this. I'm feeling bad about it, bad enough for me to say we must sit down and talk about this. So let's set aside some time regularly to talk about this. And you know what? You might find that you don't even get down to the topic itself. But in talking, you'll be talking about so many other things. It's going to be very therapeutic. The exercise itself is going to be therapeutic.
Okay. So sit her down and actually have that chat.
No, you can go for a walk or so. Don't need to sit down.
All right. You're going to give me an example of, when you talk about how much love is enough. Tell me, Paul.
Okay. I was thinking of that during the break just now. Mm-hmm. And the word for that, the phrase for that is taken for granted. Ah. Now, that is the opposite of having enough love. When you feel as though you're being taken for granted, not appreciated for whatever you do or whoever you are and things like that, that's when you might be able to turn around and say, I'm not getting enough of. Then you can use the word love. It's too broad, too large, a wider spectrum. But you can then be specific and say, I need you to be home more often. I need you to do this more. I need you to walk with me more, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But when you start beginning as though you... When you start feeling as though you're being taken for granted, that's a good indicator. The other indicator, which you might not be aware of, is when you start behaving in different ways interactively with members of your family or with your partner and things like that. When you feel that you're not getting enough of, you'll start resorting to other compensatory behavior, like widening the gap, lesser talk, lesser time together, lesser eating time or TV time or anything like that. But you'll become more and more dysfunctional, relatively speaking, from what you were before. Look out for issues like that. If you start becoming dysfunctional in terms of psychological presence and relevance, then it's becoming pathological. You might get depressed. You might develop anxiety disorders. You might develop aggression. Those are very significant indicators, but you don't have to get to that stage at all. It doesn't always get to that stage. Sometimes it bypasses stage and there's divorce that comes in as an option too.
So just to be aware of the symptoms, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely right. But that's number two. Number one is to be aware of yourself first. And maybe you need to redefine, am I loving enough? Not as being lovable or loving as a person, but am I actually giving love enough? I think that needs to be revisited regularly.
And, you know, how do you know you're giving enough?
By the response. I mean, if I go out and feed my dog every hour, she's going to eat it all.
Dogs are great.
Okay. You know. She's going to eat it all. And if I dote on people all the time, every minute of the day, they're going to take it. They're going to kind of absorb it all, but it's not going to be good for them. It's going to be different because I'll be giving, mm-hmm. giving. Someone's going to be taking. And then you're going to get a seesaw. You know? Out of balance again.
Okay, so look out for all of that. When you talk about indulgent behavior, what if you feel you have earned it, Paul, and then you decide to overindulge? Is that necessarily a bad thing? I mean, we keep telling ourselves, I've worked hard, I should actually treat myself, you know, that kind of thing. Should we be thinking along those lines at all?
Yes, nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with it at all. I think positive reinforcement in terms of indulging in something you feel you've earned or indulging in something that you may not even have earned, but why not? You know, I'm a hard worker. I don't need that, but let me spend some money on a one-night stay in a hotel in KL. Even though I live in KL, why not go and stay in a hotel and be pampered? Don't do my room, have breakfast, and you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Why not? But if it's going to be a habit, you've got other repercussions to think about. And at what expense? Why save 50 cents or why save $5 or $10 when you might feel a lot better at the end of it rather than how bad you might feel if you don't do it? So you've got to take this into consideration too. In general, Mira, if you feel you've earned it, pamper yourself once in a while. It's good.
Once in a while. Keyword.
And a while comes about maybe twice a month.
Don't bust that credit card and having to pay at the end of the month. We have a question here. Is it going to love, right? Are you being loved enough? Mm. Is it going to ever be enough? Is the question.
It can be. But I'd say it'll never be enough because there's no boundary to love. There are no limits to love. There's no definition. There's no bank that says, sorry, we can't take in more because there's no more space for love. You know, you never have that in someone's emotions. We have the capacity to love endlessly. We have the capacity to be loved endlessly. And if you love effectively, you're not going to spoil anybody. You're only going to strengthen ties. So there is no such thing as loving too much or being loved too much. It is how you love. If I'm just going to love you with money, I'm going to pamper you and cook for you and clean you and bathe you and do everything for you. Hello, that's not love.
But that may be some of the things that it is love for some people.
Well, this brings us to a very exciting thing called the human lifespan. As infants, what do we need in terms of love? We need food. We need someone to touch us, someone to comfort us, someone to clean us. That's all we need. And of course, we don't know it yet, but security. People are looking after us. Now, from that point of need, we kind of move and we develop. We develop senses. We develop thinking styles, mindsets. And then we go through all kinds of complexities of human behavior. Towards the tail end of the spectrum, what happens then when you're old and suffering? You need food, you need sleep, you need comfort. You go back to the essentials. Now, that's a cycle. And that's exactly what's going to happen because that's the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to feel it, like it's going to come and bite you in the back.
It's going to come and bite you. Yeah, and then when you have all those millions in the bank account, you're not going to be saying, I'm 90 years old, I'm dying already. I think I want to go to Jamaica and have a good time. You won't be saying that. You'll be spending it all on nurses looking after you.
There is a view that self-indulgence has its roots in childhood.
Yes.
Really?
Yes, in terms of nurturing behavior, in terms of conditioning. You can teach children, well, sorry, I take that back. Children can learn how to overindulge in eating behavior, in play, anything, even in playing with computer games, TV. They can learn overindulgence when you have permissive parenting. And people allow you to overindulge and you never taught limits. You've never taught gratification. You've never been taught this word called satiety. And we have centers for that, gratification centers. You've never been taught enough. They've never even learned the concept of diminishing returns. I mean, if I give you 5 oranges, you feel you have to eat all 5, when actually orange number 2.5, 3, 4, and 5 actually tastes horrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these can be learned. Therefore, it has its roots in childhood. It can have.
It does. And who's to be blamed for that?
Yeah. Who's to be blamed for that? The primary environment.
Yeah.
The primary environment, which now constitutes not just the parents, no longer actually, but TV, all the overload of information, the overload of choices. That's an amazing thing we have now. We've got this smorgasbord of choices that children have, and they don't know how to focus on particular choices. They want everything as much as they can, as quickly as they want to.
Instant gratification. But then again, Paul, sometimes as parents, we want to give our children what we were not able to have.
Yeah.
And therein lies the problem. We don't know where to stop. What's your advice?
Learn to stop.
How?
No. I think the parents need to revisit the developmental curriculum. We've mentioned this in our lifestyle workshops, healthy living workshops. We need to actually examine and look at where are children going to head to and where in what direction they're traveling in, to what extent, and what's going to happen to them in front. Way, way up ahead. We've got to have some kind of a crystal ball that we're going to look into and say, hey, this, it looks as though my kid is going to end up like this, 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 and that. The reason why we're not even aware of this is because we're not stopping to think about where they're going with this. They've got too much money to spend in the canteens. You see children who are in this high-class cafes and McDonald's and KFCs having all this food, too much food, too much good food, when people grow up with sandwiches and bare minimums and they're both alive. And one gets more sick than the other. Now, they're not looking at this. They want to give the children as much comfort as possible. Children who are still walking to school, cycling to school, if distance requires you to have a car, fine. But parents need to sit and think about what they're giving, why they're giving, and where it's going to end up.
Okay. Big problem. Yeah. Big problem.
It's a huge problem. You cannot predict the future. But if you spend enough time, you can watch human behavior, and I can actually plot the dots. Sorry, join the dots. I can join the dots and tell you where it's going to end up.
Right. We're discussing overindulgence or the concept of enough. When we come back, we're going to be discussing compulsive addictive behavior and what leads to that as a result of overindulgence. If you have a question for Paul, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasuthi. In the studio with me, Paul J., consultant clinical psychologist. We are discussing the concept of enough, how much is enough, what sort of individuals are we bringing up in this day and age. It would seem like it's a huge problem because we don't seem to understand the concept of enough in a big way, isn't it, Paul?
Don't understand enough. I don't think we visited it. We just know the word and how to use it in a sentence.
Absolutely. Paul, when does more indulgence sort of lead to bigger problems? Compulsive behavior, addictive behavior, you know, and I'm sure we're already seeing it.
Yeah, I'd say when it reaches an addictive stage, then you're running into huge problems because the behavior itself no longer has significance. It's the consequences of the behavior and sometimes the actions of that consummatory behavior that actually leads to pleasure. It's no longer what you buy. It's the action of buying, the very fact that you're going out and doing things or taking the drugs or buying another dress or buying additional nail polish or buying some more handbags compulsively. That's an addiction already. And it could be compulsive behavior. It need not be OCD, but it definitely is compulsive, driven by some emotions that may be obsessive.
Okay. And it probably starts now?
It starts at any age.
Yeah.
And it manifests through your own abilities to spend and engage in that behavior. So it could be anything. It could be anything whatsoever. However, you know, it's interesting to note that addictive behavior such as smoking or alcoholism or even drug addiction, TV addiction, computer playing games addiction. Do you know that many of these addictions stimulate similar parts of the brain now? So addiction is addiction. However, it's important for you to think about the definition of addiction. Perhaps the most important definition would be an addiction is when you cease engaging in that behavior, you will have certain kinds of withdrawal symptoms, not necessarily physical, but definitely emotional as well. So if you have withdrawals and the desire to re-engage in that behavior, then you definitely be able to say that you've got some kind of addictive behavior.
Paul, do you not think that, you know, in this day and age, a lot of us, you know, living in this capitalist world, wanting more and wanting more, has a lot to do with also the fact that we don't feel we're good enough? I think a lot of us can relate to that. Is there some element of that?
Yeah, there is this. The technical term for it is called atelophobia, A-T-E-L-O-phobia, and it's fear of imperfection or fear of not being good enough. I think that's one of the most dangerous things that is happening in young households these days, when children fear they're not good enough because their parents have only one narrow definition of what childhood is or being a child is, and is defined in terms of things like grades and performance in various other measures. That is a huge problem domestically, and many, many families are showing symptoms of that. Many children are becoming symptoms in themselves with regard to this kind of phobia. Now, that also leads us to this other acronym, FOMO, F-O-M-O, fear of missing out. And that also drives a lot of children into wanting more, engaging in more. A lot of young and upcoming professionals are engaged in this, don't want to miss out. I've got to be seen in the right company, in the right place. I must be hanging around this bar, this pub, this restaurant, this golf course. I need to be in this kind of car and in this area of residences because I don't want to miss out, and this is the definition of what's going to happen. Yeah.
We have a question here. What if we're able to achieve a certain biofeedback mechanism? This person has used the word samadhi. Would overindulgence be cured by that? I don't know very much about what samadhi really is, Paul.
Yes, it's a very good point. Very, very good point. if you want to change behavior, let's say overindulgent behavior, or say cigarette smoking or drinking or buying, or compulsive buying, all you need to do is to be able to become aware of your behavior. Now, if they're going to be physical symptoms, physiological symptoms, an important thing is called biofeedback. So you're told that, listen, you're consuming too much sugar. Now, blood tests is a biofeedback, sugar levels. Observation, if people observe you engaging in certain behavior, when they provide you feedback, it then gives you the idea that, oh, I'm engaging in this too much. I'm biting my nails too much. I'm drinking too much. I'm sleeping too much, whatever. So feedback is very crucial. It comes in the form of biofeedback, behavioral measurement feedback, and issues like that. But feedback is important.
What about mindfulness, Paul? We hear that word being used.
I see.
In a big way.
Mindfulness is a very important word. I've always talked about it. Mindfulness, the crux of mindfulness is being in the here and now. Okay, being in the here and now and being mindful of what you're doing here and now. Not worrying about the intrusiveness of thoughts about yesterday or the past, or intrusiveness of thoughts that come in with regard to the future. Being able to be in the here and now, enjoying the moment, being in the zone. Now, that's the crux of mindfulness behavior and practice. The other thing that's in that word is mindful behavior. Do you know what you're doing now? Are you aware of what you're doing now? Are you appreciative of what you're doing now? That's important too, because I think what we forget is that we have a presence. We forget the presence. We forget where we are at the moment, and we're always headed at breakneck speed to wanting more at the next moment. What's going to happen the next moment, next moment, next moment? Just like these crazy drivers on the road, they overtake you like mad, and you finally catch up with them at the traffic lights. Yeah. And off they go speeding again, and you overtake them at the roundabout.
Yeah.
You know, they never look ahead, you see. They're burning their calories and everything. Everything's going haywire.
So, you know, here and now, try and practice that. I just find that really quite a challenge, Paul.
It comes with practice.
Yeah.
It comes with practice. And listen, all of you can practice mindfulness. It's a fantastic thing. You can teach yourselves to do this. All you need to go down, look for it, is on YouTube. The man to look for is a person called John Kabat-Zinn, Z-I-N. John Kabat-Zinn. He's the founder and the father of mindfulness in terms of evidence-based modern psychology. And he will talk you through the steps. Practice it. It's really good for the body, mind, and spirit, and your behavior too. You'll be taking time off to be with yourself. I don't think people do enough of that, connecting with themselves enough during the day. Very important thing to do.
How do we start thinking about the things we need to do more of?
Well, I'll start with a question, a simple question. Are you happy? And if you say yes, I'll say, okay, then why are you seeing me? If you're happy, why are you here? Because I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. There's something amiss. So I'm not happy. What is it that you're not happier about? What do we want to do about it? So if you can define your happiness and decide that I am happy, whether you're a criminal engaged in criminal behavior and you're happy about it, you'll face the consequences. But if you're happy in terms of being a lazy person in a relationship, you're going to face the consequences of that too. It's when you realize you're unhappy about something and you're out to bring about balance again, work-life balance, love balance, expression balance, money, anything you have in the formula for balance, if you can balance the books out, then you're happy. That's what we want to do. Mm-hmm. So my first question would be, are you happy?
You make it sound so simple, Paul.
Psychobabble and psychologists and all these big, big terms have taken all common sense stuff and made it so complicated. Our job is actually to help you unravel the knots a little bit and make it look simple. It is simple if you choose it to be. Because when you work on it daily and you are aware of these things daily, it becomes less and less complicated. It's like working in a very tightly knit ball of string. You just take out one strand at a time, slowly, take your time, and you suddenly say, it's so easy, lah. I just needed some time. And I often put up on one of my slides when I talk about mental health, common sense. It's something that's such a rare commodity these days. So easily lost, very hard to find. Too expensive to buy.
It's shocking.
It's shocking. It is common sense.
Yeah. Okay. So your advice for us this, you know, season, festive season, it's coming up to the end of the year, to indulge or not to indulge. What's your message?
My message would be two questions. First question would be, do you have more than enough? Do you have more than enough? If the answer is yes, be happy with it. If the answer is no, then my question would be, do you have enough? If the answer is yes, be happy with it. But if you ever feel you are short of enough in any one area, please do something about it. If you don't have enough food, do something about it. If you don't have enough friendship, you must do something about it. Sleep, water, the basics in life. If you feel you don't have enough love and appreciation, do something about it. Don't sit and wait for people to read you. You actively decide to do something about it. So the word for today is to contemplate the word enough. Apply that in any thought you have in the jam today, going home, over the season, however much of consummatory behavior you're engaged in, enough. And maybe you should learn this phrase, enough is enough.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year,
Same
Paul.
To you.
We'll see you next year. That was Paul J, consultant clinical psychologist, on the concept of enough on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.